Can he drive?
Can he drive? You know what DK stands for?
Donkey Kong?
Drift King.
Drift? What do you mean, drift?
And I gave you the clap.
Oh, you just want to say that because
I really did. I just wanted to say that.
So funny, yeah. Because you want to take it back to when you were 21, 22 years old, and it's 2006, and venereal humor is running wild. Hey, everybody. Welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your go-to source for all things about movies that came after two other movies, or quite possibly after seven other movies. Who's to say?
We'll get into it.
As always, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And we are talking today about the Season of the Witch installment of another long-running 20-plus year franchise. We are talking about 2006's The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Woo!
Oh, and I can't begin to tell you how happy William Morey is that we're talking about this goofy franchise, because, you know, it's all about family.
All about family.
All about family. Hot was family.
So, Sam, I'm assuming your history with this franchise is similar to mine, in that you saw the original Fast and the Furious in the theaters and then kind of never thought about it again until it started to get good with the fifth movie.
Well, I don't even know if I saw the first one in the theater, because it was very much like the ultimate 2001 dude bro Limp Bizkit movie. Yeah. And that wasn't really my scene. I was kind of a soft boy, you know. Also, it's like, I don't know, it never grabbed me when it came out. It's like, I was never a car guy, and these first few are still, like, ostensibly about cars and racing. This one is probably the most purely about racing. It's the only one in the entire franchise where the problems are solved via a car race.
It's true. I saw the first Fast and the Furious at like a dollar theater, so it had sort of, by the end of the summer of 2001, it had made its theatrical run, so it was at the very tail end before it vanished from theaters.
I mean, it was a big deal.
It was a huge hit.
It was a huge hit, and I'd say, like, he'd done Saving Private Ryan, he'd done The Iron Giant, he'd done Near Dark, not Near Dark.
Pitch Black,
thank you. But this was like the coming out party for Vin Diesel. And this movie, I mean, there's a reason he's still in this franchise. This movie made him a huge star.
Yeah. And so I saw it, and I remember thinking, wow, that was stupid. And then never bothering sort of with any of the other franchises. But then at the same dollar theater that I saw the first Fast and Furious, I was working as a projectionist when this movie came out. So I think I saw basically the whole thing, but never in like one go and never in chronological order.
No one's seen this franchise in chronological order. And like most people our age, they saw The Fast and the Furious and then sometime later they saw Point Break and were like, wait a minute. Because if you have not seen the original The Fast and the Furious, from 2001, directed by Dragonheart's Rob Cohen, and with a screenplay from, among others, David Ayer.
Right.
It's very 2001. It's about a guy who goes undercover in the drag racing world of Southern California to infiltrate a gang that is robbing high-speed robberies of top-end items like DVD VHS combo players and things like that. But it is
Xboxes.
Yes, Xboxes. Beat for beat, the same plot as Point Break, but swap out surfing with cars. It's that's the whole, the long and short of it.
And it spawned one. Was it 2002? Was
2003?
2003 was the next sequel. Too Fast, Too Furious.
Which is, like, I think maybe number two all time on the list of joke sequel names people make fun of after Electric Boogaloo. Even compared to this, it's the oddball in the franchise, in that it's the Vin Diesel still in his I don't do sequels era. So Paul Walker comes back. They introduce Tyrese and Ludacris in that one.
Right.
I know I've seen it once, but I do not remember a damn thing about it. John Singleton, who did Boys in the Hood, directed it.
Right. I've never seen it. I've never seen it. I have no idea what that movie is like.
Yeah, I think it's set in Miami. It's got Ava Mendez. It's still ostensibly like action crime movie that's heavy, heavy, heavy on the cars and the drag racing.
Right. Yeah.
That one I don't think was a huge success because Paul Walker's character, I think, never quite moved the needle the way Dominic Toretto did.
He did, yeah.
But, you know, he's the straight man. He's, you know, this is an early 2000s movie. He's the safe lead because I think Hollywood hadn't figured out what ethnicity Vin Diesel was yet. So he was exotic and frightening to many people. Right.
And he went off to, well, I guess that was that 2001 or 2002 that he did Triple X.
Fast and the Furious 2002 was Triple X.
Right, yeah.
Which he also didn't come back to as a franchise right away. When we talk about, what's Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage.
Right,
and
yeah.
The State of the Union is the second one with Ice Cube. but he also did... he did Chronicles of Riddick was in there. There was like A Man Apart, I think it was called.
Right. And then there was his like big drama Find Me Guilty.
Sydney Lumet's Find Me Guilty.
Where he was doing an Oscar play and that just sort of fizzled out.
I don't know about Vin Diesel now. He's been playing the same action hero for 25 years now, and he looks too old to be dressed like that. But like, he was so very, very earnest. Like, he was like, I think his charm was that as a person, as a movie star, he had like an earnestness in the same way Keanu Reeves often does, where he just seems like he's so genuinely happy to be making movies, regardless of what they are. And I think maybe that's sort of calcified at this point, because it's become a much like the franchise itself, it's become a bit of a cartoon version of its own self.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Vin Diesel has a very large ego, and I think that is like taking up a lot of space in these movies. You know, Justin Lin was sort of, and him famously had like a fight on set, and like that movie, was it Fast 9 or was mm-hmm. it 10? Where the movie basically didn't have a director for like 2 months, right? Like,
yeah.
While they were shooting, so it's like, oh boy, and you can see it sort of in Riddick, the third Chronicles of Riddick movie,
Riddick,
which he is like heavily involved in as a producer, and it's very clear that he has to look awesome in every single scene. And it, like, it doesn't, the character can't be on the back foot. He has to just be like awesome.
No, it it became that, like, the line between his real life persona and his acting persona got very blurry. You know, I think after he had like these big franchises that didn't pan out, and then he sort of drifted, if you will, back to the Fast and Furious franchise, which he literally does at the end of this movie. He's I'm back. I have to take this franchise away from you, generic white guy.
Yeah. So, Fast and the Furious 3, Tokyo Drift, which...
Before we go move on, I want to ask, did gals in your high school think Vin Diesel was hot? Because I feel like a preponderance of my Massachusetts schoolmates thought Vin Diesel was just gorgeous.
No, I don't think so. I don't remember anyone talking about Vin Diesel a whole lot. Josh Hartnett seemed to be the heartthrob of choice.
Hartnett, Heath Ledger.
Yeah, Heath Ledger, absolutely.
The hunks of the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman, if you will. I remember Hugh Jackman
was
millennial teens the way Mel Gibson was 10 years prior.
Yeah, maybe this speaks to the cultural makeup of my high school, but it was very sort of white bread.
Is he, did they like, they like Paul Walker? He's that nice boy you can bring
home.
Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
Whereas in Massachusetts, we're a little more rough and tumble, but we also are all about family. We're all about family. We're all about family and vocal fry. But yes, so the franchise sort of didn't know where to go, but it was, I think, like, it's like they were, I think this was the movie where it's that one of those things where the studio, Universal's like, I don't know, we got this thing, we want to try to keep it going somehow, let's make like just a whatever kind of third movie that has nothing to do with the others, like you do with like a horror franchise,
right?
And it just happened to be the right confluence of talent behind the camera, primarily,
right,
that then just defined the franchise from there on. And this movie is like this weird hinge on which the next five films turn. It's really incredible. So it's this movie is chronologically, despite the fact that it is riddled with flip phones, like they're a major plot point in the final race, are just old Motorola Razors from 2005.
They're just, and that can shoot video too.
that must have been, I just picture Chris Morgan sitting there like, how the hell are we gonna make, like, wait a minute, it's on a mountain, they're not actually watching it, how do we make it so they can see what's happening? How do we make it? How do we keep Sonny Chiba engaged?
Yeah, just Chris Morgan banging his head against his laptop repeatedly.
It's like, wait. Cameras. Phones kind of have cameras now. It's actually prescient, because if you did the movie like a year or two later, that wouldn't even be a problem.
Bat an eye.
No, it's just the one summer later you had iPhones out.
Right.
It actually occurs to me that anyone in that movie that's not watching it on the phones is just reacting to nothing. So Sonny Chiba's not looking at a phone. He and the girl are just standing there, I guess, reacting to other reactions. Or Sonny Chiba's just like, I don't care which one wins.
Whatever. I want to be out of this situation right
me,
now.
You've got me for 3 days. This is really a movie with, I guess, the only name in this in 2006, I mean, people who knew Kill Bill, people who knew Japanese cinema knew Sonny Chiba. He's awesome. We love Sonny Chiba.
Yeah.
But I guess it's Bow Wow. That was the biggest star in this movie.
That was the biggest name. Yeah, it was clear. I mean, it's clear that,
you know, he was like Mike.
Yeah, it's clear that this movie did not, the studio, it was just sort of a mid-level programmer for Universal. It was just sort of like, we need to fill a hole in the summer.
Yeah.
And, like, here's what we'll do. We'll make a Fast and the Furious sequel. We'll just kind of crap it out. I mean, this movie, it doesn't seem, like, all that complex to put together. But they've got, like you say, that behind the camera, it's, like, Chris Morgan and Justin Lin. And I don't know, Justin Lin was coming off of Better Luck Tomorrow, or...
He'd done Better Luck Tomorrow, which is also technically, canonically, a Fast and Furious movie. And he'd done Annapolis that same year with James Franco.
Oh, right.
And Jordana Brewster and Tyrese Gibson were in that. So it's also like a cousin of this franchise. But that was a bomb. This was like his first big movie. And same with Chris Morgan, who he'd written Cellular with... Jason Statham and Chris Evans, which is just like, you know, some...
Again, a mid-level studio programmer.
Yeah. they had enough faith in this that it came out in June of 2006. You know, it was a peak summer movie. I was in New York that summer. I was living in Manhattan, and the ads for it were everywhere.
Yeah. No, I remember. But those two basically guide the franchise for the next, 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, Justin Lin directed, he directed Fast and Furious, which is the fourth one. He directed Fast 5. He directed Fast and Furious 6. And then he was gone for a couple and came back and did F9.
Right.
And Chris Morgan was...
He's the writer on all of them,
the
right?
writer up to The Fate of the Furious. And he has a story credit on Hobbs and Shaw. Right, and so the last couple have not been them. Justin Lin's got a screenwriting credit on F9 and Fast X, but those movies are both bananas.
Well, and I think that's also where Vin Diesel started sort of taking over creative control.
Yeah.
And they start becoming like, they start becoming this weird blend of telenovela and shonen anime.
If you can, you imagine someone working their way backwards in this franchise? It's so strange, because this movie is, so this movie was, it did okay. Like, it wasn't a flop, but it's the lowest grossing movie in the franchise. And I think over time people have come to like it more, because I think if you, if you're coming into this franchise, well, this is what I'm going to say. This movie is really bland. Yeah. Like, super bland. There's no one in it you can really latch on to. Like, Han is a kind of cool character, but he's really not in it very much.
No, and then he dies, and you're like, oh, okay, well.
He dies, like, very, or does he?
Right. No.
It's like, it's a very, like, teen angst drama from the tooth. It feels like a CW pilot. Like, that's what it feels like. It feels like the Fast and the Furious, the series, CW pilot with a not Paul Walker in the lead in the form of Lucas Black, whose character is goes between being a nothing and being a dick most of the movie.
He's such an asshole.
Yeah.
He is such an asshole.
June 2006. I'm just looking at what else came out that month. What a summer. Like, you had the Omen remake, which got made because there was a 6606 in the calendar.
Right.
And you had Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. You had Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, and The Lake House came out that same weekend. And Nacho Libre.
Oh.
Click and Madea Goes to Jail.
What a summer.
Oh, and that month ended with Superman Returns.
Right. Superman Returns, and then the summer kicked off with X-Men The Last Stand.
Oh, God. And
and Pirates 3, too, right?
Pirates 2 and 3.
Pirates 2, well, yeah.
Yeah,
Pirates 2 was 2006. Pirates 3 was 2007, or was it?
I think it was, it like summer and fall? We'll get to that franchise. We'll get there. Good Lord. It's another one where you're going to go all Matrix Revolutions on me and be like, now, hear me out.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, like, I would say, like, you know, if you're used to the new movies where they're, like, putting cars in, where the movies barely care about cars anymore. They only care about cars because Vin Diesel drives in the same, like, muscle car to do everything. This is a movie that is still, like, these are car characters and they're into cars, and it's a type of racing that you hadn't seen before in the franchise, and it's actually kind of cool. Like, it's clear that they, like, wanted to show this drift racing that you hadn't, I don't think you'd really seen before in an American movie. And the franchise doesn't really take advantage of it very much.
No, I mean, and I remember right around this time was when this anime and manga series Initial D was starting to come over here, which is about street racing in Japan. And there's like episodes of that where they learn drift racing and stuff. So that this movie reminded me a lot of that at the time. I haven't seen or thought about Initial D until watching this movie the other night. So
it's also around the same time as the remake of The Italian Job. So you had, like, little cars and weird cars were very trendy again. but yeah, it's such a, besides the racing, which is, the race scenes are really well done, and there are a lot of practical stuff. And I'd actually say they're better than the first two movies, as I recall.
They're really dynamic and very, like, like you said, fun. They're just, like, there's a lot of energy to it that, like, sort of the rest of the movie doesn't have.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. But the thing that makes this movie significant is that it introduces this character that then fans liked so much that they kept bringing him back, even though he dies pretty firmly in this film. So it kept pushing this movie further and further down the timeline of the Fast. So it's our lead guy, whose name I've already forgotten.
Luke, we could just call him by his...
Sean. Sean Boswell. He's a ne'er-do-well. He gets into incredibly dangerous street racing in his, you know, sort of, Arizona home. Like, rebel without a cause level drag racing through, you know, that housing development from Back to the Future. Right. And that gets him sent. He's moved from school to school. He's been at 3 schools in 2 years, but he's now going to live with his dad, who's an army guy in Tokyo. And he's got one of those little Tokyo apartments. And he probably drinks, and he's going to be, you don't go near cars. But of course, this kid is such a jackass. He goes immediately near cars in a country he does not understand one bit.
Yes, and then he's
also, because it's 2006, he's one of those quintessential, like, he's playing 17, he's in his mid-20s, he looks 30.
Yeah. Yep, and then he runs afoul of some Yakuza-connected racers.
Yes, and their buddy, Han. And Han is like this cool guy who works with the main bad guy, who's the nephew of the Yakuza boss played by Sonny Chiba. And Han sort of takes him under his wing, along with his classmate, played Twinkie, played by Lil Bow Wow. So it's just, the whole movie is just Sean talking to his friend Twink. And, right. You know, I guess we didn't know what that term meant back in 2006 yet.
And Twinkie has a Hulk car, too.
Yeah, he has a Hulk car, and he deals in Jordans and cell phones. He's filling the, like, Tyrese role in this.
Yeah.
It's like you kind of try to figure out who are the analogs to the actual franchise in this.
Right,
and, and so Han has this, like, chop shop where he has, like, a bunch of, like... Like, what you think of as being, like, they clearly were like, okay, this is going to be, like, the crew in later movies. There's, like, a big dude, and there's, like, a cute Japanese girl, and they never get names, and it's
like... Yeah.
And it's, like, it's just, the movie just kind of, like, barrels through all any character development. And it's, like, I thought I was, like, they were suddenly at this point where Takashi... The main villain, DK, the Drift King.
Right. The Drift King.
He's confronting Han for stealing from him, and I was like, I didn't know Han was doing crimes.
Right, yeah, I was like, he was stealing from him? When did that happen? And then I realized, like, all the stuff that they were doing was, like, they were laundering money, right?
Right.
That was sort of the idea, yeah.
It's a really undercooked, convoluted plot that gets to Han getting killed in the streets of Tokyo. But it also begs the question, how long had Han been in Tokyo? Because let's go forward / back. Han in Fast and Furious, the fourth movie, is working a crew in somewhere with Vin Diesel in the opening sequence. And then they go their separate ways. And he's like, I heard some good things about Tokyo. And we're like, DiCaprio meme. But then Fast Five, when the franchise becomes a full-blown heist franchise, they get a crew together, and that includes, like, Tyrese and Ludacris from the second movie, and Gal Gadot from the fourth movie, and Han's part of that crew, and he falls in love with Gal Gadot, and they're driving off at the end, and they're like, she's like, where are we going next? And he's like, I've heard good things about Tokyo. And we're like, we're gonna get to him dying. But nevertheless, Fast and Furious 6, he's back, but at the end, Gal Gadot dies saving his life in that airplane sequence.
Right.
Or does she?
Right.
It's much like in Marvel Comics. No one stays dead but Uncle Ben.
Well, hang on.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Because I think we just kind of are going to have to, we got to suss out this franchise to get back around to Tokyo Drift.
Right.
All right, so then it's like, he's all sad at the end, and he's like, I'm going to go to, we always talked about going to Tokyo. And then post-credit sequence, we're suddenly in Tokyo Drift, he's in the car crash, but the car that T-bones him, that you see in the original movie, is driven by Jason Statham. And he's now, like, the villain for the next movie.
Because he's the brother of the villain from Part 6, right?
Correct, that's, yes.
Yeah.
Who you think is dead, but is also not dead.
Incredible.
Okay, but so then the scene at the end of Tokyo Drift where Vin Diesel shows up to ostensibly get Han's body and bring it back to L.A. to bury him. I'm like, doesn't Han have, like, actual family? But, and he also is like, well, I'm here, I have to drag race once. I can't not drag race. So, but then, it, like, that scene gets inserted into Fast and Furious 7, and that sort of brings it all full circle. But then they can't leave it alone, because Han doesn't stay dead, because in F9, it turns out that Han was working for the CIA the whole time, and gets pulled out of the wreck by Kurt Russell's character, and is just off somewhere off camera watching the thing explode. So it's like all the things that technically are going on just behind the scenes during the plot of Tokyo Drift are insane.
Yes.
So when you're meeting him, he is essentially a character who is in mourning because he just lost the woman he loved, but has been in Tokyo long enough to have a business relationship with the nephew of the Yakuza, and is also working for the CIA to get something. I forget what.
Is that were they trying to get the thing from John Cena's character in that? The plots of these movies all run together for me. I cannot remember.
Here. Yes. At the safe house, Han reveals that he was assigned by Mr. Nobody to protect the Project Ares creator's daughter, because the little girl was the biometric activation key.
Oh, God.
For
right.
It.
Right, right, right.
Which was, I think Charlize Theron's character wanted to get, and she was using Dominic's up to that point never mentioned brother. For a guy right. who's all about family, he never talks about his brother, played by John Cena.
Yeah. It truly is bonkers when you sort of lay it out like that. It's like, obviously, this Tokyo Drift was not made with any of that in mind.
No,
but
no.
It's,
this is not. They're but not.
But it's so funny when you like think about it. You're like, wow, there's a lot of like complex stuff going on in the margins. It's like this techno like spy thriller that is like this like behind the scenes of this mediocre teen drama.
Well, it's just a testament to how much this franchise has like become like warped and mutated over the years to go from being, you know, a crime action movie set with around like the world of underground street racing to right. now in by the time you're in F9, they're basically like Marvel superheroes trying right. to it's they've become XXX movies.
They
like,
really have. Yeah.
They're going into space. They're like jumping off the Hoover Dam. They're trying to stop like bombs going off in Venice, and everyone that you think is dead is still alive. And
except for the one character played by an actor who has died.
Yes. It's so weird. This franchise is so strange in how it treats the character of Brian, played by Paul Walker, because obviously Paul Walker died tragically, but the franchise didn't kill the character. He just sort of left. He has a kid with Jordana Brewster, and he's a family man now. He's left the life. They bring Jordana Brewster back all the time, to basically hang out with Vin Diesel's kid, with Dominic's kid, named Brian, who he named after his living friend who he could call or see or visit anytime. There, to bring his kid over for a play date. But then the movies, anytime they're reflecting on Brian, act like he's dead. Like it'll be Vin Diesel looking at a bunch of pictures of him and Brian hanging out, and, you know, See You Again by Charlie Puth kicks in, and it's just like, I don't know, man, pick
a lane.
Yeah, no pun intended, pick a lane.
It's one of the weirdest creative decisions, because you could very easily just never refer to him ever again and it wouldn't be a big deal.
I mean, I get that, like, he died during the production of
right it was a
of the sixth movie and
it was the seventh, I think.
Yes, the seventh movie. Yeah. And they had to sort of work around that and use CG, and his brother did some doubling for him. And it's obviously, you can't like then just like kill the character, especially right. in a car crash because that's how he died in real life. I get it. It's a dilemma. But it's just like the movies have become so like they've just like sort of like swallowed their own tail in terms of just like their commitment to the lore at the expense of the plot. Because there's many, many moments throughout these movies where they want it, like someone emerges and you're supposed to be like, it's supposed to be a moment kind of like, holy shit, Spider-Man's here. But it's just, you know, like the villain from 4 shows up in 6. And it's like, I don't remember 4. I don't know.
Who is that guy? I don't know who that is.
These movies need to be a little more in the moment, I think. And I think that's kind of the charm probably of these first 3. Is and definitely this one because it has the least baggage attached to it. It's as generic as it is, and it feels like those post Fast and Furious kind of knockoffs that came out, like Torque and Biker Boys. But there is a charm to it because it is like it's a big summer tent pole, but it is so simple and small in terms of its action in a way that makes it kind of enjoyable on a certain level. It's that mid-level action movie or mid-level like summer release that you just don't see any. It would go onto Netflix. It would be a series.
Yeah,
and it would not have had a chance to let these guys move on to reinvigorate the franchise.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It would have gone directly, had it been made now in the same configuration, it would have just gone right to Peacock. It would have, like, that's what Universal would have done. And it would have just been, or they would have just kept doing more things like this just for streaming or for Peacock. And you'd never get your Fast Five, which is really like the best one of these movies, where it takes everything that worked from the first 4 and reconfigures it into something truly great. Like,
yeah.
It's like a really legitimately great action movie.
Like, tonally, I don't know if this movie, like, the terms of the subject matter and what the story is necessarily defined the franchise going forward, but it's clearly, like, clearly they saw, okay, this director and this writer and Brian Tyler, the composer, to a lesser extent, because this movie's using Ba Wada Ba, which is like 5 years after Ba Wada Ba had any sauce. So, but still, like, those guys behind the scenes, they then, when they were able to get the original cast back for Fast and the Furious, they were like, okay, let's see what they can do with that. And that was enough to then be like, okay, we have a franchise again, and it's enough to lure The Rock in, and we can get all of these guys back and do this big, you know, make our Avengers movie and connect all of this stuff. And I think, to Justin Lin's credit, he knows how to do action. Like, real, like, the stuff in Fast Five is really good. It's insane. They kill a lot of people in Rio. And a lot of people were collateral damage with that safe. But that sequence is awesome.
It is. And it's legitimately a great, like, American action movie.
And it's got these two big bricks of meat, going up against each other.
Exactly. And I mean, I think there's something to be said for 6 and 7, because I think they're fun.
I really like 6. 6 is a lot of fun. I think 5 and 6 are the high water mark.
Yeah, I think so too. And 7 is fun. It is hampered by the problem that, you know, Paul Walker died while they were making it, and you can kind of tell, like, that movie was, like, they had to scramble to put that movie together.
It's also the point where the franchise starts having way too many characters, because, like, they set up that Jason Statham's the villain, but he's not the villain, he's the secondary villain, and Jimin Hunsu's the main villain, and he's trying to get that, like, God's Eye thing, because then you introduce Natalie Emanuel from Game of Thrones as the hacker, but I thought Ludacris was our hacker, so, you know...
Right, and then she basically, like, is in a throuple with, like, Ludacris and Tyrese for the red lights.
Because they don't know what to do with her. Like, the best thing they've done with her since is that in Fast X, there's a sequence where she has to, like, help them escape, and they're like, okay, get us out of here, get that car going. And she's like, I don't know how to drive. And I was like, okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the most interesting thing about Tokyo Drift is Han and, you know, Sung Kang,
yeah.
Yeah, who's a great actor.
Yeah, he's really good. He's never really had a chance. No one's given him a project outside of this where he's really gotten a chance to, like, show off a bit. Like, there was that Walter Hill movie he was in with Stallone.
Right. Which I tried watching once, and I couldn't really get through it.
It's a prototype Jason Momoa as a villain movie, right. Which is important for Fast X. did you see Fast X?
No, but I heard he's sort of doing he's basic, like a Jack Sparrow type of thing.
He's Jack Sparrow by way of the. It's insane. It is so. It's because he's also being very like metro sexual, right. And he's doing it the opposite like. You know, Vin Diesel, and it's just absolutely absurd. And he was also just off camera in all the scenes in Fast Five.
Right, of course. Yeah, of course he was. Because, yeah, like you say, these movies just have to swallow their own tail and have to, like, keep referencing themselves and just embedding themselves in this lore like it's Lord of the Rings or something.
To the point where it's like, I don't even know how it's gonna... Well, I mean, Fast X is an insane movie. It's like, it's they just took a XXX script and turned it into a Fast and Furious script, because it's by the end of it, it's like you think everyone's dead and Michelle Rodriguez and Charlize Theron are in some sort of underground like research base in the Arctic. And Alan Richson's in it. Brie Larson is in it. And you first meet them in this kind of like, the headquarters for like Kurt Russell's group, but it's like this weird, like almost like the headquarters from the Minority Report, you know, where they're like, you know, with their, everything's like screens and stuff. You just think back to like this one where they're like, the third act is just, we got to get a car ready to go down a hill. And it's pretty well done drama.
Yeah, the big thing is like, oh yeah, you gotta learn how to drift. Like that's like the major conflict.
It's actually the same character arc as Cars.
It is. It really is.
Drifting's hard. I've tried to do it in Grand Theft Auto many times, and I still never quite cracked it. So it's like, I screwed up my drift. Now I'm facing the cops. I'm just gonna have to get out.
Just gotta get out.
Start firing rockets at them.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. The other thing I do want to say, have you watched Warrior yet?
I have not watched Warrior yet. All
right, well, Justin Lin, I think he directed the pilot, but he's a producer on that show. And one of the guys who's also in Better Luck Tomorrow, who's in this, he's sort of like the very weird guy, like
the blonde dude?
He's not blonde. He's one of the guys who works with Lucas Black. He also is like one of the mechanics in one of the later Fast and the Furious movies. Yeah, it's Jason Tobin. He's in Warrior. He's great. So this is my chance to plug Warrior, which I think just popped up on Netflix.
Yeah, Better Luck Tomorrow, which I'm guessing diehard Fast and Furious fans know about, is made in 2002, and it stars Sung Kang as a character named Han, who I think after the fact Justin Lin has said is the same Han as Tokyo Drift, and it's a much more grounded movie. It's like,
oh yeah, I mean even more grounded than this one. I mean it's about these kids who are like doing drugs and like trying to like ace tests. Like,
yeah. Asian, you know, Asian American kids in Orange County
getting into trouble.
So, but it is technically canon. Hans, everything Hans done that you've seen that's happened off screen would be enough for a couple movies on its own.
Really, they should just make a Han spinoff. Is what they should do, and just do Han's adventures.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, it can't
be the Chronicles, the Han Chronicles.
That's the weird thing when they did a spinoff. It was missing something.
It was
when they did. You'd think The Rock and Jason Statham versus Idris Elba would be kind of a layup, and it was like there was just something missing there.
I think it was trying too hard.
I think it's also if you take away the Fast and Furious overlay and the Toretto's and the at least lip service to cars and street racing, then you just have a generic action movie. Then you have XXX, and it's like you have Die Another Day. You know, it's like it's just it kind of loses what makes it distinct, and it's such an odd franchise. It's committed to the vibe of the first movie, but it's become something completely different.
Right. I mean, the thing that, like, Hobbs and Shaw is trying to be is, like, Tango and Cash. And I think the problem is that it's trying too hard to be Tango and Cash. And Tango and Cash is, like, an unironic, earnest action movie. For all its faults.
Tango and Cash. Cash and Tango. I'm supposed to be French. How many other ethnicities besides creepy white dude has Jack Palance been cast in over the years? I know he's played a Mexican many times.
I'm sure, yeah.
I'm sure he was Dracula once. maybe I'm, like, conflating him with John Wayne as Genghis Khan, but I'm sure he's played, like, that. I guess he was in the gore movies.
Yeah, he was like, some sort of high priest.
Well, we all love Jack Palance.
Yeah, has he been in a part three? I don't know if we'll ever.
Well, they didn't. Him. They didn't get to City Slickers 3.
No,
they didn't get to Outlaw of Gore 3. Angel's Revenge was one and done. That's a really good question. I'm gonna look it up while you hear from our non-sponsor.
Let me look through our.
The first thing that comes up is, like, him with long hair and a thin long mustache. So he definitely played, like, an Asian or a Native American at some point.
Sure he did. I do want to say that the same summer that this comes out, Mission Impossible 3 also comes out, and I think in a similar way. They define sort of the franchises going forward.
That's a really good point, because it is about the same. It's about the people behind the camera that kind of just figured out, okay, we know how to make this click.
Yeah. I mean, even though, like, they really didn't find it until, like, the next two movies, but it was sort of like, okay, this is the tone and the vibe we want to go for on the creative end, and then we'll let them cut. You know, everyone cut loose later.
Yeah, well, it's like as big as you can get while keeping the action scenes, you know, give them geography, ground them in some way, make them something the audience can follow, because I think the art of storytelling through action can be a lost art the more, you know, especially the more, like, visually effects heavy you get.
Yeah.
Where it becomes, like, I don't want to bag on the Marvel movies. Everyone does that now, but it is like they become this kind of, like, everything just becomes a bit of a mishmash of colors and flashing lights, whereas you go to, like, something like the Fast Five chase sequence or the chase sequence at the end of this, and you're following it, you can track it easily, and you're invested.
Yeah, I mean, and especially later on in this like, as like in I haven't seen Fast 10, but in Fast 9, the action scenes just sort of become noise, like you were saying. It just sort of, like stuff is getting thrown at you, and you cannot follow.
They become like almost Michael Bay-esque. They're like the Transformers ones, where it's like action, noise, explosions. Character says either something funny or go up those stairs, just so the audience knows what the hell is going on.
Right, like, go up the stairs and turn off the blinky light. You know?
Try that ramp, you know. I think the thing that makes these movies work is the Vin Diesel-esque energy, which, even though he's not in this movie, there's still that spirit of, like, earnestness. Like, no matter what happens in Fast, like, in Fast and Furious 6 or Furious 7, you have to still make sure there is time for Vin Diesel to have a wrench fight on a parking lot roof, because it's still got, you still have to tie it back to him. I'm just realizing this. The grounding thing is Vin Diesel's ego, because you have to make sure you're still laser focused on him. Right. And that's the thing that tethers us down. And that's what Hobbs and Shaw doesn't have. And it's, you know, I think it becomes kind of a soupy mess at the end.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, and I think, because Vin Diesel brings that earnestness and brings that whole thing where it's like at the end of each Fast and the Furious movie, everyone has to sit around the table at the Toretto's house with a Corona and cheers.
And he'll be like, "Salud mi familia." And we're like, "What ethnicity are you? Your brother is John Cena. Your dad was clearly Latino. Your grandmother is Rita Moreno. Your sister is Jordana Brewster. What are you, Mr. Toretto?"
But yeah, I mean, I think, and especially as the movies become increasingly more complicated and like overwrought. You need that like grounding earnestness to like cut through. You can at least, if you're getting lost in all the noise of like the car chases and like the screeches and the explosions, you can at least sit back and go, okay, they're all going to sit around the table and have the Coronas and we're going to be okay. You know?
Are the Toretto's mom, who we've never seen, is she just the car from My Mother, the Car? So they're all just part car.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know.
Kids, ask your grandparents about My Mother, the Car with Jerry Van Dyke. I'm the last living millennial that knows about it.
God, I hadn't thought about that one in a long time.
No one has. I just put it back in the universe. It was gone. It's like the Jedi are extinct. My Mother, the Car is extinct. Its fire has gone out of the universe.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, now it's lazy. There has been an awakening. And now someone at probably New Line is developing a reboot. I did it.
12 episode
limited
My Mother
series.
The Car limited series on HBO Max or just Max, excuse me.
She was like a Model T. It was basically like, what if the grandma from Beverly Hillbillies was also your car?
God, I just remember the title. I don't even think I
you don't
saw
need
it.
Anything. That's the brilliance of it. You don't need any.
Fast, My Mother the Car.
Fast and Furious presents My Mother the Car. Yeah, there is a through line of this franchise, certainly through like the peak of it, which is I would say 5, 6, 7, and then it kind of just starts like the people behind the scenes tend to become more scattered and are more at the whims of the movie star there, for better or worse. But I would say, yeah, this is the one for what this is the one where it was just they got the right people and they kept them around to redefine this franchise, because there was no consistent director or writer before Tokyo Drift, and there was a writer and director who shepherded it through the next 10 years of the franchise.
Yeah, and made one of the best action movies, American action movies of like the past, you know, decade or so.
Oh yeah, no, Fast 5 kicks ass. That movie is so good. Like, you'd think it would be a mess, but it is so tight. It's a really well-done action movie.
Yeah, and you can watch it without having seen any of the other ones, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, because it's like they're putting a team together, and that one's not bogged down in the lore. Because it's like, just, we're putting a team together, we've got, you just know who they are and what their deal is, and then you're into it because you've got enough movie stars that you recognize,
right?
You know,
exactly. It's like, and you have The Rock chasing them, and The Rock, and like before he had sort of gotten like a huge movie star ego too, and he's really fun in that movie.
So. Yeah. No, he's that movie is a lot of fun, and it would not have happened if we didn't have Tokyo Drift. If you're a fan of any installment of this franchise, you owe a debt to Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
In the same way, everything that's come since Halloween 3 owes a debt to Halloween 3.
In one way or another.
But unlike that franchise, this franchise wasn't cowardly enough to never bring Han back.
That's right, yes. Yeah. They did eventually bring him back, for good or ill. I mean, I think it's great, because Sung Kang is great. But it is very weird.
I mean, I'd say the only detriment is they never really do enough with him in the sequels. Right. But he's always there, and he's, you know, he's such a charming dude. And he has his nice little runner with Gal Gadot, which also, like, I don't even remember. She shows up in the fourth one, and I do not remember. The fourth one is, like, a whole. I've seen it probably twice, and I do not remember anything from it. I think a lot of people feel that way. It's a very complicated plot, as I recall.
I want to say she's an IDF agent in that movie. I think she's a cop of some sort.
She's undercover with the bad guy, and I think she has, like, a romance with Vin Diesel in that, because... Yeah. Michelle Rodriguez's character, Letty, is dead.
Or is she? I mean, again, it's like a telenovela meets shonen anime.
Yeah, you know, it's got the right amount of soap and action, you know? Yeah. What a fun, odd little duck we stumbled upon. It's if you are watching this franchise in any segment of it, you want to go back and see how it all began. Yeah, those first three are so wildly different, but this one is, it was the little acorn that grew a mighty stupid oak.
It's not the ride, it's the rider. Quote from the movie. I don't remember exactly the context, but I wrote it down.
I think it just means that a car won't go unless you sit in it.
Yeah, I think that's the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is factually, well, unless it's a self-driving car, but where's it going to go without you?
I don't know. It could be somebody's mother. You don't know what that car is doing.
Remember, folks, every car is someone's mother. We'll leave you with that. And Will, always a delight. This was a lot of fun.
Always.
All right, folks, you have a great night.
Adios.
Bye.